Oh, I just got really fuzzy. I'm going to unfuzz myself.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
You are listening to episode 141 of Sapnin Podcast with myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend, Morgan the Organ Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards. And if you're somehow feeling like a prehistoric dog, all the arrows would suggest you're probably too high to listen to this podcast. But to be honest, it's probably the best way.
How does somebody feel like a prehistoric dog for a start?
What does that entail? Well, you could feel so rough, dog pun, that you feel like an old dog.
Fucking kill me. Kill me.
I'm not barking mad for coming up with this.
Oh, I hate my life.
I nearly logged off. Well, mentally,
Do you know what? You fucking do the rest of this shit. This week's guest is bassist, frontman, vocalist, and one-time stand-up comedian, the ever-lovely Aaron Beam of Red Fang.
Yes, and this is a beautifully chaotic episode as it can get. Red Fang are a band known for killer riffs, party atmospheres, and just good times. Their label...
And the best music videos. The best music videos. So, so funny. Carry on, sorry, Mog.
No, totally agree. And their label even quotes them as saying they're Portland's beer-crushing, zombie-killing, air guitar contest judging stoner metal heroes, which couldn't be more perfect. I feel they've become a real band's band over the last decade, not only for their music ability, but always producing hilarious music videos and not taking themselves too serious. So with the release of the band's new fifth studio record, Arrows, available worldwide now, we had to get Aaron on to give us an insight into their mad, mad world. But Sean, I know this is a band that Bob, Snoz, and a lot of the Blackout would put on back in the old days, traveling in the van and just having a laugh at all their wild concepts.
Yes, you've never seen a band with such funny videos, I think. I became aware of them after a video called Wires, I believe, where they took their record label budget and just spent it on wacky shit. You definitely have to go check out Wires, check out Arrows, check out everything they've got out, because they're all funny and they all seem like really, really nice guys. And this was our first chat with Aaron. Despite finding out that we were definitely in the same place in 2013, I believe. it was a fantastic chat. And I found it super interesting that he tried his hand at comedy.
Yeah.
Because I guess anybody who's listened to any of these episodes probably thinks, oh, that twat, Sean thinks he's funny. He probably, and I do, I would like a go at the stand-up comedy. So it was good to hear from somebody else. But yeah, I can't get over that he did it once. It went so well that he was like, oh, cool, I never need to do that again now. Because I'd be longing to do it again. But well done to Aaron for completing stand-up.
Yeah, who would
have
thought?
Some would say that's 100% record. He might be the most successful comedian of all time, really.
Well, we can definitely tweet that we've got the most successful comedian of all time on the podcast this week now. So there
one
we are.
One show, Yeah, one show, one killer audience. Like, fantastic. Yeah, job done. Like.
That's all it takes. But no, we're going to get an insight into that one comedy genius stand-up set and a host of different things, from the album's delay and excitement that they've got new music out for the first time in 5 years, their famous video concepts, working for an animation studio, wasting money, touristy things in the UK that we didn't even know about, and a lot of unexpected connections to one James Hetfield from Metallica.
Yeah, I don't know why my mind kept going to Metallica when we were talking to him. I think it's because Red Fang are like big story riffs and stuff like that. But yeah, absolutely fucking fantastic chat. Thank you so, so, so much to Aaron, everybody involved in making this happen. It was good to meet him. I hope we get to do one in the flesh, because I think that could be fun and funny.
Yes.
So, yeah, thanks to Aaron. Thanks to Red Fang. Yeah, make sure you check out their new album, Arrows.
Yes, it's got some absolutely awesome riffs. And just before we go into the conversation, as always, we'd just like to remind you, if you enjoy these podcasts, if you like having a laugh with what me and Sean do each and every week, please head over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/sapnin, where there's a host of bonus content over there, and you get to be included in our wonderful community, who are always sending each other presents, hanging out, meeting up now, it's getting a bit safer over here, and just having a wonderful time. So if you'd like to give back to the podcast in any way, that's patreon.com/sapnin. And alternatively, you can go and check us out on our social media pages at sapninpod.
Yes, on Twitter and Instagram, at SapninPod, at SAPPENINPOD. That's at SAPPENINPOD. And yes, like Morgan said, if you'd like us to shut the fuck up about our Patreon each and every week, what we need is, we need 7,000 Patreons to sign up,
yes,
right?
Yes,
so
please.
So do us a favour, you and your friends all get together, sign up, you know, get a quid in, help the boys out, support the podcast. If you've ever been entertained by this, you owe us a quid. That's it. I'm standing firm to this. You owe us at least a quid, as I've decided now. So help the boys out, support the podcast, keep this going, keep us alive, and eventually we're going to get the greatest equipment of all time so you can see the podcast in your mind. I can't say any more than that because I'm currently working with Elon Musk on that, and I can't say much more than that, but we need more Patreons to make this happen.
Yes, we do. We
basically
do.
Yeah, Elon said that if I can get 5,000 Patreons, we can eventually get involved in his head chip device thing that he's currently making at the moment, to have the podcast sent directly to your brain each and every week so you could see us and smell us. You don't want that.
Oh, no one wants that. No one wants that. But there is a lot of bonus content on there that you would enjoy. But anyway, without any further ado, let's get straight into this wonderful conversation with Aaron of Red Fang.
Yes, fucking cracking. Great band, fucking loads of riffs, funny videos, and what I believe are lovely, lovely, lovely humans. Fucking tidy. Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Well, that one for a while.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. it's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Sapnin!
Yo.
That's
what's happening.
No, there's no second goals. There's no second goals of this. I can't believe it. This week's guest is vocalist,
sorry,
bassist.
I'm a bassist, not a drummer. That's why I missed that one.
Fair enough. Yeah. So, yeah, this week's guest is a vocalist, bassist, and apparently one-time stand-up comedian.
Ooh.
Aaron Beam of the fantastic band Red Fang.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. I have been waking up a little bit before six every day, so I thought it would be no problem to be here at for a 7 a.m. recording of a podcast, but of course, my alarm woke me up this morning, and so I'm a little groggier than normal, and hence I missed my cue on Sapnin. You can just cut that in now. How did you find out about the stand-up comedy?
Wow. Research. We're very good at researching. We know everything about you, and we're just going to dissect little bits of your life for the next
hour. That is very weird, Morgan. Don't put him off. We just started, Morg. Don't fucking put him off now. Fuck's sake,
aww,
man. Basically, I was doing some research, and I found a podcast that you did where you mentioned doing stand-up, and it's one of the things that I'm currently being forced into doing by a comedian, so... I haven't done it yet, but I think I would love to do it. How was it for you?
Well, I'll warn you, if you think that you would love doing it, you have to also question, do you love the idea of potentially becoming a drug addict?
Ooh.
Because in my experience, it was really, really, really fun, but, you said that you played in bands before, so you know the experience of trying to kind of recapture the excitement of that kind of perfect show where the energy is all perfect. And so I had an incredibly great first and only time doing stand-up comedy, pure luck, and also just whatever timing and the circumstances. But I could feel that if I tried it again, it was going to be nowhere near as good, and I was going to be chasing that experience over and over again. Plus, it is like 100 times more nerve-wracking than playing music in front of people. And so I drank like 8 beers and was taking sort of like these anti-anxiety pills and a whole bunch of other stuff just to be able to get out there and do it. And I was still, my heart was still pounding out of my chest when I got up there, even though it was a room full of friends and there was no pressure whatsoever. And so I just knew, like, if I was ever going to try to continue doing this, that it was going to be the end of me as a physical being. Yeah. So I quit after the first one.
But what you got to think about is, if you killed it on that first show and you were, you know, semi-drunk and potentially anxiety medication ridden, well, fair play. You've done very, very well, obviously, for the first time.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, you never know. The second time. Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like, I suppose if you do a real good one, like you did, like my thing then is, like you said, it's the chasing the dragon. It's trying to repeat that performance again. But if you have a bad one, I can see why you'd step away from it. So yeah, I like the fact that you've kind of gone, well, I've completed it. I did so well there. I know I could do it.
Well,
that's enough for that. That's enough for now.
That was, this is probably not the best thing to spread around the world, but fingers crossed that it's not that big a deal at this point. But many, 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 many years ago, we'll just say an illicit substance went into my body and I spent an entire night doing it. And it was a really, really fun time. And then by the time it was wearing off at 3 or 4 a.m. the next day, I said, well, that was great. I'm never doing that again. And I never did it again because it was like the perfect version of it. And I just didn't want to ever, well, A, I didn't want to become an addict again. Same sort of thing. I didn't want to become an addict to that chasing the dragon thing in comedy, and I don't want to become, you know, I'm lucky in that I don't have that inherent sort of that gene or whatever built into me that I get physically addicted to that stuff. It's easier for me to just do something once and say, all right, that was enough of that. Let's move on.
Yeah, nice. Well, yeah. Well, I guess taking that on board, does that mean that when Red Fang write the perfect song, that you're going to be like, well, that's it now. That'll be it. That's our last ever song.
Luckily, I feel no emotions about playing music, so I don't get addicted. No. That's a good point. I guess it's just that when it comes to like drugs and, you know, I'm not passionate about making comedy the way I am about making music. I love obviously being a consumer of comedy. Like how could you not? Who in the world is like, yeah, I'm not that into laughing.
Oh, I hate fun. Oh, fucking chuckling. Oh, does my fucking head in.
Fucking chuckling. God.
Fucking chuckling. Yeah. You've never seen anybody angry saying the word chuckling.
I hate that.
Fucking chuckling.
Fuck giggles.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. No, but that's quite interesting to hear, though, that especially like the whole Chasing the Dragon and the high of performing live at a comedy gig was so different for you than playing a live show and touring and stuff like that. And obviously, you just did the one, but was it just a completely different ball game than there is playing with Red Fang? Like, as you said, you're passionate about music, you're passionate about comedy, but seemed like those experiences playing it live and doing it yourselves differed so much.
Well, there's the huge, huge difference is that music is something that you can do in your bedroom by yourself, and you can evaluate, you know, you can have your own evaluation of how well or poorly you're doing, and you don't actually need to do it in front of people. And you can make a recording in your own time, and you can control all of the circumstances and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas with comedy, whether you're good or bad is 100% dependent on the audience and their reaction to you in that moment. And so it's sort of like the obvious thing is that you're just totally by yourself up there. And that is a much different thing than in the context of a band. And B, your self-worth, I think it's tied up with your, you know, with other people's perception of you really, really easily. And so that was kind of like, not to get too serious, but that's kind of like that's the future that I saw, was me getting way too wrapped up in like how the audience perceived me as a reflection of how good or bad I am as a person. And it was also another, you know, thing at the time was that movie Comedian had just come out. I had just seen it in the theater, the movie about Jerry Seinfeld's return to comedy. Yeah. And it also had that guy Henry Osborne in it. And you could just see, like, it was so clear how insecure every comic was. And throughout most of the movie, you're like, oh, it's weird. Jerry Seinfeld is the one guy who actually is secure with himself, until he sits down with Bill Cosby, at which point you realize, oh, no, it's just that he feels superior to all these other comics. But then as soon as he sits down with Bill Cosby, you're like, oh, no, he's exactly the same as all of them. He's a super, like, insecure dude.
Yeah, I guess looking back on that now, though, Jerry could have been nervous for other reasons, like, what has Bill put in my drink? What's going to go on? What's happening tonight? You know,
yes.
So, but yeah, that was, yeah, I remember that. That film had one of my favourite trailers of all time, with the guy with the voice who does, like, the
in a world.
Yeah, one man, a girl, two girls on the edge of space. Yes, fucking, yes, genius.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, yeah, the reason I am going into stand-up, I guess, sooner is just because I haven't got a band behind me that could hurry up and just play a song if I fuck up. Because I think that's my worry. Like, I'm going, boys, play! Oh, no! I'm not in this band! Shit!
Right.
Well, that's an interesting start, and some thoughts for Sean to think about. Yeah, don't get addicted to anything, Sean. I think that...
Oh, I probably will.
These podcasts are going to get even stranger.
Oh, can they? Can they, though? That's the question. Like, we've literally had DMT talk on you, so... yeah, so... Can they get stranger?
Fair.
I don't know.
Fair, but... But saying that, Aaron, you mentioned you recently that you've changed your schedule and you've been getting up pretty early for you over there and stuff. Is there any reason behind that, or is it just trying to mix things up in this kind of crazy world we've been living in for the last year or two now?
I don't know if you guys can see all the way across there in England, but see all these like little, this is natural, these grays in my beard.
Nice.
Yeah. One of the things that happens as you get older is that your body decides that you're going to start waking up earlier and earlier. So, but I've actually, since the beginning of Red Fang, you know, we didn't start touring until I was in my mid-30s. And I was the guy that, like, we're up partying till 4 or 5 in the morning in the early days of touring with that band. And then I'd be awake at 8 a.m. So, and I'm still, like, on... The tours in the U.S. when we have to drive ourselves, very often I'm just awake at 7. That's sort of like what time my body wakes up. So there's no alarms involved, just a biological alarm that I need to stop staying up late. So it's it makes it pretty challenging for I have to adjust my schedule like crazy when I go on tour, because my natural schedule is to be in bed by like 9:30 or 10 and then waking up at about 6. And that was, I think that's totally independent of any kind of, it's not because I have a kid, it's not because I have a job, that sort of stuff is easier because I already wake up earlier. But playing music is, it can be a challenge sometimes to adjust my whole schedule.
Yeah, well, I was wondering where you were currently situated when Morgan said, oh, we've got like a 3 p.m. UK call with you. And I was like, Where is he in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean? How is this a reasonable time for anyone? We appreciate you being here. We thank you very much. Congratulations on all the Red Fang success so far.
Well, thanks. I mean, and the other reason that that 7 a.m. is not so bad for me right now is I actually have one more weekend today. We'll make about a year, almost a year and a half of me having gone back to my old work that I did before Red Fang became our main job, which is working at a stop motion animation studio.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
Yeah. So it's kind of a weird, I don't know how exactly it happened that I got into it in the first place. I was sort of between jobs, and a friend of mine who worked at this studio called me up and she needed a little help organizing her department. She worked in the puppet department, painting faces on puppets for this stop motion production. And she knew that I was an organized person, and she brought me in, and I just kind of started working there. But then I found out a little bit later that she actually didn't have any authorization to hire anybody at all. And so it was real strange that
who's been paying me?
Exactly, that somehow I had a job even though I wasn't supposed to, and it didn't go through the heads of the puppet department. And then I ended up interviewing for a proper position, and they said, no thanks. But then luckily a guy in one of the other departments that was kind of the sort of like kind of important department for that production, they printed out, they did like the 3D prints of the faces that were being painted for the animation. He had gotten attached to me, and so he sort of like went to bat for me, and then I ended up staying on for like a year, and then they brought me back for the next one, and I just made a bunch of contacts. And so when, you know, things started getting a little bit weird, I just called up some of my old puppet contacts, and there happened to be three productions, feature length productions going on in Portland all at that time, and I got hired at one of them, so worked out pretty well.
Wow,
that's nuts. Yeah, that's fucking brilliant. That's the best other job that we've had on here so far. Yeah. I think
it's a pretty strange
one. I love the idea where you said the head of the puppet department. I just think of loads of like naked hands just like no no, that's it, no, I'm sorry, we can't hire at this time or whatever.
But what a way to get a job anyway, is to go in there and get paid for a job that didn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not exactly sure how she did it. She was very charming person. So
Was she paying you out of her own account?
No, I can't remember.
You were getting paid by the company?
I think she probably went directly to, like, the HR. I don't know. Like, I was, like, you know, I was getting a proper paycheck. But I think she just had somehow maybe gone around the department heads and, like, gone directly to the producer. Or I'm not really sure. It was, as long as I was getting paid, I didn't care.
Well, last week on social media, I saw a guy in Italy has been employed by a hospital for 15 years, and he hasn't worked there for 15 years.
Wow. How? I've heard stories like that. I've also heard there's a sort of a grifter who ended up with, like, a pretty serious job as an ER doctor or some sort of a doctor at a hospital who had... He had zero medical experience at all. He just was really good at convincing people that he was something and ended up, like, working as a doctor with no medical background at all. I'll pretend to look that up and send you a link later.
Yeah, I'd love to know. Yeah, what was his survival rate?
Oh, God.
Like, at what point did somebody go, are we sure he's a fucking doctor?
Right.
Because that guy needs an heart transplant, and for some reason he's taking his fucking foot off.
I'm all for like faking it until you make it, but that's a bit extreme. Like,
fake it until you kill somebody.
That's a new level of confidence.
Yeah.
Make it till you break it. Like,
there was also the story about there was some. It was like a law advice blog or something that I think was mainly just criminal lawyers who were on this, you know, chat room or something. Discussing cases and trying to figure out, you know, giving each other anonymous advice about how to go about defending or prosecuting certain criminal cases. And there was one user who had the most useful, like the highest number of recommendations or whatever. He was the most effective at giving advice. And it turned out that it was like a 14-year-old kid who just watched a bunch of Law and Order.
No.
Wow. Yeah. Fucking Johnny Cochran's nephew. What the fuck? That's fucking mental.
I just don't understand how any of that works, because, like, imagine trying it yourself though for a different job. Like, you know, the amount of sports I watch, but, you know, Chicago Bulls ain't gonna sign me up.
Imagine that.
There's no way.
That's fucking nuts.
Or imagine trying to infiltrate a band and just convince somebody that that's what we did.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I remember back in the day, probably early 2000s, when Limp Bizkit kicked Wes Borland out, and they were going around the nation auditioning guitarists. There was people who were just turning up who've never played guitar before, just on the hopes that the day they turned up, God was just going to send them the riffs. Like, it's fucking nuts. Yeah. We should talk about Red Fang, really, shouldn't we?
Because there's a lot of exciting things going on with the band. Now, finally, you're putting out this new record, Arrow. I know you've had it ready for quite a while. There's been some release dates and you've had to reschedule and stuff, and due to all the madness going on in the world. But how are you feeling about finally getting some new music out now for, like, the first time in 5 years?
Yeah, as you might imagine, it feels fantastic. It's strange to... I think that everybody probably had a pretty similar experience, or has had this experience, since we're kind of coming out of... Hopefully, it feels like we're kind of coming out of the depths of the pandemic, that when you start talking to people about, oh yeah, that was this thing that I did, that was last year, and then you realize... Oh, wait, no, that was 2 years ago. That 2020 sort of just kind of disappeared into this weird vortex. And so I guess in one way, it doesn't feel as long as it could. I think if the pandemic hadn't happened and we had just had to wait this whole extra year to put out the record and everything else was going as normal, then it would feel like, what is going on here? But I think because everybody was in the same boat, it's not quite as strange. It's definitely weird to have to shift gears from, we're about to put out a record and start touring, to, oh no, okay, nothing's happening. And then to just suddenly go straight back into that after, you know, just resetting our lives into whatever we were doing in between. I had to go listen to the record again, because it had been long enough that I couldn't remember, you know, what it felt like to listen, to it. And I had to get back into the mindset of what was it like to have just finished that. And so it was all of that stuff is a little strange trying to figure out as people are asking questions about, did you guys use the time to write more material? And then thinking back to what was my mind like in April, May of 2020, and why didn't we write more music? And there's a bunch of reasons, but thank goodness we're releasing it, and we can actually start to share this thing that we worked so hard on with everybody.
Yeah, for sure. And one of the reasons we were so excited to have you on the podcast, and Sean's mentioned it quite a few times in the past, is that Red Fang have always had that real comedy aspect behind the scenes of the band. Obviously, you know, the music speaks for itself, but you don't take yourselves too seriously in front of the camera on social media or anything like that. And one thing we found that really cracked us up was from your record label, Relapse, who not only described you as beer crunching, zombie killing, air guitar judging metal heroes, but just a lot of other things like that. Is it quite nice now that even though you've been doing it for so long, that you can still have that fun and not take yourselves too seriously and just let everything speak for itself?
Well, I think that that's one of the reasons why we have been able to do it as long as we have. If we were mired in the sort of like the darkness and seriousness of some of the lyrics and for us, some of the music, that would just be overwhelming. It'd be too much, and it'd be like, okay, this is too intense, let's just get out of here. I know that we have, like, there's plenty of songs that are total party songs, but a lot of the lyrics are pretty dark, even on the party songs. But I'd never really thought of it in these terms before, but reflecting on it while you're asking the question, I think that part of actually what probably helped me just like as a human to have a better relationship to just like my own thoughts and life in general and how seriously to take things in general was the fact that early on, you know, we had, that the song Prehistoric Dog is ridiculous. Like lyrically also, it's about like literally dogs from outer space coming and attacking, you know, it's stupid. So that one lent itself really well to a ridiculous video. But I think that I always was like, for years and years before Red Fang, I always took myself pretty seriously as a musician. Okay. That's not to say I was a good musician, but I just, you know, I was like, this is important, this thing that I'm doing. And someday, you know, maybe somebody may notice and maybe they won't. But the thing is that like what I'm doing is like trying to make good music or whatever. And I think that with Red Fang, we all wanted to just take ourselves less seriously musically and just be like, let's have fun, because like music should be fun. And we all got into music in the first place through bands that were exciting and, you know, invigorating, and not just like, you know, not like the kinds of bands that made you want to get out your calculator and figure out how do they fit so many time signatures into a minute and a half. I know this is a very, very long answer, but I think that that sort of lightheartedness that came from the videos that was sort of inspired by just like our mission statement as a band, all of that stuff tied together to just make us be a little bit less, take ourselves less seriously in general, which is pretty important, for, I think, for longevity for stuff like that, unless you're some sort of a super genius auteur who can actually achieve the, you know, the intense vision that you have. But we're not that good, so we have to make jokes about ourselves.
No, that's the thing. I think people just get caught up so much in what they're doing and not see the bigger picture of that, like what people are actually getting from it from an outside perspective. So it's just been amazing to see that, as you said, you've had that longevity, you don't take yourselves too seriously, and you're having fun. That's the most important thing. And I think a lot of people do have fun when they listen to Red Fang.
I hope so. I think the other part of it is that, yeah, there's a lot of serious and dark and sad stuff that happens, or even like frustrating stuff that happens in people's lives. But that's really not any different from any of the boring, mundane stuff that happens in your life or the super awesome stuff. And so taking any of it too seriously is kind of a silly, like, that's no way to go through life. Like totally attaching yourself to any particular thing at any one time. It's like, that's going to pass. It's going to go away eventually. You're going to feel like shit in for now, and then in 5 minutes, you're going to take a shit, and then you're going to feel great.
Yeah.
Very true. Very, very true.
Tell us about some of the underground messing that you've been doing with fans over the years, because I read something about with this record is actually named after a track that is actually on the album, where in the past you've named records after songs that didn't make the cut. Little things like this, I think, is what really crack people up. Yeah. Give us some more insights into little things the band has done over the years.
I wish I could say that we were smart enough to have done any of that stuff on purpose. It was
right, okay.
most of the naming records after songs from other records is just sort of like not being able to make a decision about an album title. And so, you know, I think it was just like, oh, it was a cool song title that would have made a good album title. It was. So why don't we just steal that for this one? I think that's really where that came from. And then I think that because we'd done that a couple times, then we thought, hey, you know, it might be kind of funny is actually naming an album after one of the tracks on the who's ever thought of that before.
Yeah. Hey guys, I got something totally new and fresh, check this out. Yeah, a question I had was how did you guys come to work with like Fred Armisen and Brian Posnan for the videos? Was that the director's doing then, or do you guys know them personally? Because I know Fred's from Portland.
Well, right? No, he lived here for a while. His sister lives here. He bounces all over. He was, I think, lived in New York at the time. Oh, no, well, not the time that he was in the video, but he was in Portland for shooting Portlandia. So Brian was the first sort of like famous person cameo that we had, and the way we got that to work was basically, well, A, we already knew that he was a metalhead. B, he's on Relapse, which is the same. He has like two comedy records on Relapse, same label that we're on. But actually, the way that happened was John Sherman, who plays drums in Red Fang, he had tickets, I think, for Brian's show. And we were just chatting with Whitey about like the director of those videos. So like, who should we try to get to play the, what do you call it, the cashier at this convenience store? And John was like, oh, well, you know what? Next weekend, Brian Posehn's going to be up here and I have tickets to the show. And he just sent him a direct message over Twitter. He was just like, hey, this is John from Red Fang. I know you're going to be up here next week. I know this is kind of a long shot, but, and he just wrote back and he was like, sure, I can do that. And he just came down. But it took him like, wow. You know, it took like an hour or something because he's actually a professional actor.
Yeah.
And then for Fred, I kind of knew Fred through Portland contacts. We have mutual friends, and when he moved here, I already sort of knew him a little bit because Portland's, you know, small town. But I think in that case it was really just Whitey just reached out directly to him. They were wrapping up a season of Portlandia like the day before we shot that scene in the Blood Like Cream video. And so he was like, oh yeah, I'm not flying out till the day after, so yeah, I can come down for a morning and shoot some stuff. And similarly, he's so good that it was, you know, just took him a couple hours. And then, and he's also, both of them are also very, very nice and very generous people. So basically the answer is we asked. That's the short answer, is we asked.
Yeah. Well, no, but that's perfect, because I never would have thought to do that, just for the simple reason I don't think anybody would say it. It's that, yeah, that's like me waiting now for Dave Chappelle to play over in the UK and then go, oh, I'm going to shoot a video this week. Dave! Yeah, just DM Dave Chappelle. Dave, what are you up to? Do you fancy being in our video? And he's going to go, no.
Right, but it's weird. Right, but the thing is that, you know what will guarantee that he won't do it is if you never ask.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
It's true.
Yeah. And, but it reminds me a little bit, some friends of mine, who actually played on Murder the Mountains and did some of the like the overdub recording. They were a couple and lived in, I can't remember if it was Nashville, somewhere in Tennessee. And they were starting out and they didn't really, as a two-person band, and didn't really know what the ins and outs of like, how does it work with bands and music and the business and like playing shows and whatever. So they just wrote a letter to Fugazi, I think it was, and were like, we love your band, blah, 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 blah. And then ended up creating a relationship. And that's kind of like how they got, like, through contacts that they got from Fugazi, ended up kind of getting established, and then, you know, became a touring band, and it just kind of worked out. And I think actually one of the mutual friends I have with Fred, Lance Bangs, my understanding is that the way that he got into, he's like pretty big time director and filmmaker at this point. And I'm pretty sure that his start was also that he just like wrote a letter to Michael Stipe and just told him how important REM was to him, and then established a relationship with REM and started learning, I guess, about movie making through doing stuff with those guys. That's probably a horrible bastardization of the actual story, but that's it's something hey, it along sounds those good lines. To me. But again,
yeah, I'm just going to write down names of everybody who's in a giant band now, and then send them a letter later on today.
Yeah.
Dear James Hetfield, I like the riff.
Do you want to come show me how to plant a garden?
Yeah. Dear James Hetfield, I don't think much of that drummer.
But speaking about some of your videos as well, Sean's former band, I've always listened to them on, watched them on the road and stuff, and he shares quite a few stories with me about a few laughs they've brought him. And there's two in particular I wanted to bring up. It's Arrow and Wires on their...
Arrows, plural. Z. You said arrow earlier. It's arrows, isn't it? Is it
I thought plural? I did the S not come through. I'm sorry. Arrows and Wires.
Motherfucker.
obviously, the concept of both of those is you spending the record label's check for the video on some crazy stuff. And one of the things I did want to mention is that despite those videos, is there anything that comes to mind that the band have wasted huge amounts of money on that it didn't really need necessarily in any aspects?
I know what mine did.
The very first, I don't think we've ever spent huge amounts of money on anything, but it was huge percentage of what our income was at the time is we bought, we called it the murder van. It was the first.
That's a good start.
Where's this going? Hang on.
It was the first van that we bought for ourselves because we had a couple shows just in town, and it was this like, it was jacked up, I think, and it was matte black, and it had, you know, like the little skull things on the whatever those the lock little deals or whatever, and we thought it looked super cool. And so we bought it for whatever, $400 or $500 or something. And one time almost made it to a show. I mean, I think we made it all the way there. But the van, like every probably 90 seconds or so, all the electricals would go out, which meant that the engine would also stop. And so we're like, we had never driven it in the rain. We bought this van and then we had a show in Portland that was, we maybe had to drive 3 miles. And the van probably stopped about 15 times on the way to the show. And it was raining the first time we'd been in the van when it was raining. And there was just water pouring in the back doors so that we were back there kind of like trying to shield all of our equipment, you know, like in our raincoats, trying to block the rain from getting all over our gear. And then just drove it back to my house, parked it in the driveway. And after a few months, waited for summer. And then I stuck my bike in the back, drove it to a wrecking yard where they just pay you for scrap metal. It died a couple times on the way. Eventually got it there, and then they just like got a giant forklift and brought it around the back, and they gave me, I think, $300 or $400 for the scrap.
Nearly full price back.
That's not too bad.
It's true. Yeah, I think we got most of it back somehow, so it felt like a huge waste, but...
But that's pretty good return considering. But but those videos are a very good laugh, especially with Arrows now with the purchase of the samurai sword. I'm not going to try to actually pronounce the name of the sword because I will get it wrong and embarrass myself for
Randy.
Everyone listening.
The name of the sword was Randy.
Randy the sword. I like it.
Clive the knife.
And obviously in that you're chopping up loads of different just some random objects and stuff.
Brilliant.
What was your favourite thing to cut up? And was there anything that didn't make the cut because you tried and it just wouldn't break or anything like that?
No, well, there's nothing that the sword wouldn't go through. I don't know if I'm proud of this or ashamed of this, but I was especially bad at slicing things. My aim is real. I'm horrible at sports, and I just couldn't get really the thing down. So you'll notice that, like, all my friends after the video came out, they were like, huh, you weren't really in the slicing scenes very much. And I was like, yeah, it's not that I wasn't trying. It's just that I can't do it. So the one thing, though, that, like, really... I lied because my memory failed me. The one thing that really didn't work that we were really excited about was we had this gigantic like stuffed bear, you know, like 6 feet, oh, 8 wow. feet tall or something, that Whitey had rigged up a whole bunch of blood packets in its neck. And so we wanted to slice at least into its neck and have blood spurt everywhere, but you know, physics got in our way, I guess. And, you know, it just absorbed because it wasn't tethered to anything tightly enough. And it's a big soft thing. So, of course, it just goes, puh. Which reminds me, this is boring, but you guys ever watch that show about it's like ancient weapons or something?
I think so. Is it Discovery?
A
Discovery.
And there was an episode about how Japanese, I think, samurai would wear like a scarf on their back when they're riding horses. The theory was that it was actually a shield, and I was like, how's that going to work? And so they tested it out, and it turns out that when that thing is filled with air and you shoot an arrow at it, for however like hard you want to shoot the arrow, it just kind of goes puh and then falls. Like, there's no arrow could penetrate. It's just like a piece of silk. But it's because of the air that it can't get through, and it was 100% effective against arrows. So don't hold up a handkerchief during our shows when we're playing that song.
Also, that is good advice for anyone listening to this who is afraid that they might get shot at by arrows. So at least they know now.
Oh, do you know what? It's 2021 and I am fucking sick to death of looking over my shoulder at people firing arrows at me.
Hey, well, we have listeners in Nottingham in England, and Robin Hood.
That is true.
Robin Hood, you know, lives there, doesn't he? He's always staying from the rich.
Doesn't he? He doesn't anymore, I don't think. No.
No.
He's moved, isn't he?
There's a statue. There's a statue. I've been to it.
He's not there himself anymore. Or Kevin Costner, funnily enough. Kevin Costner doesn't hang out in Nottingham as much as I thought he did either. I don't know where to, I've lost now.
There's some cool caves in Nottingham also.
Yeah?
Caves?
Yeah. I recommend that tour if you get a chance. It's a strange one because I think you have to go into a mall. The entrance is actually through a mall.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right. Ready? I got to write this down next to James Hetfield. Yep.
To invite James Hetfield to the Nottingham Cave Tour.
Yeah. There we go. There
we go. I know this is kind of a strange request, but I've always wanted a friend to go with me into these caves. And I admire your music, and I thought you might like caves.
I'm thinking about dear James, I'm thinking about shooting a music video next week in these caves. Are you about? Love from Sean. That's brilliant.
Is there any other little like touristy spots in the UK or anything that come to mind that we might have completely missed ourselves?
I can't believe I didn't know Nottingham had caves.
Jeez. I don't know. I mean, mainly one of our favorite mustards of the world is Coleman's.
Norwich is finest. Nice.
Yeah. And so we, Norwich has some, you know, they have the whatever. That's an interesting sort of kind of, if you like mustard, place to visit. I think they have a castle there too. That's like, isn't it that sort of like square on top of a hill? It's just like the Norwich Keep or something. Maybe I'm thinking of a different spot.
I don't know. I'm unsure. Problem is, over here, we're sick of castles, because we've all got them.
Yeah.
We're fucking sick of them, if you said to me, right, we're going to Norwich, my first thought isn't, I know, I'll go see the castle. Right. The smaller than the one from where I live.
Yes, yeah, it is small. All we have over here is White Castle, so.
Yeah.
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 Or that big pink one that they knocked up in Orlando and then Florida. And, yeah.
Well, speaking of random things from Red Fang's kind of press and stuff, I've noticed recently you've mentioned a bit that if lyrics weren't making sense in any way, it's because they're based off meditation, and it's something you've been trying to do for 6 years, but can only seem to do it when you least need it, when you're not anxious.
Right.
That was, I read that and I genuinely, I was telling Morgan, I was fucking crying laughing. I'm sending him a voice note going, this is fucking so good.
But isn't that, I mean, isn't that generally the case that it's easiest to stay calm when you're already calm?
Yeah.
You know, calm down. I'm already calm. Oh, that was easy.
Yeah. Oh, job done.
Yeah. I mean, I've been, you know, there's a lot of benefit to, in my experience, to that whole idea. And I love the idea of being able to get out of my own thoughts for a second and see, you know, try to get some perspective when I'm in the midst of, you know, some freak out. Or the problem with it, people generally want to use it when, like, oh man, I'm feeling really anxious or nervous and everything kind of sucks, and I wish I could just like step out for a second and kind of get some perspective so I can not attach myself to those feelings. But I don't know anybody who's like, oh, I'm having a great time, I want to like back out so that I can stop feeling so good. You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, but I think
this club night is amazing anyway.
Exactly. So I think that's the problem with, I think, a lot of the trendy attachment to meditation right now is that people want to be able to just like, they want to use it as like it's just another therapy for not feeling bad. But that's not what it's about. It's about not feeling anything ever. No, that's it's not that either.
Yeah. Oh, have you tried DMT by any chance?
I hope so. I think I'm on it. I think that thing that I took this morning was DMT.
No,
no,
you'd know because you wouldn't be able to see us.
Well, DMT is that super short-lived one, right? It only lasts for like,
yeah, it's yeah. 20 minutes.
No, I haven't. I have not tried it yet, but I'm not opposed. So if James Hetfield, if you're listening,
yeah, James, we've got an idea for a video in some caves on the world's strongest hallucinogen. Are you up for it? Spelt R. You and then up for it, up for it.
I like
it.
The world's strongest man on the world's strongest hallucinogen. Let's get Eddie Hall. You know,
oh Jesus Christ, yeah.
I think you've made a TV show there.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if he hasn't already filmed it for his YouTube channel.
Because
Fucking hell, he's done Strongest Man Does Karate, Strongest Man Tries Jiu-Jitsu, Strongest Man Does Swimming.
Right.
He's could be. At this rate, DMT is going to be next week, and then he's finished his channel, I think. He's done everything a strong man could go and do.
Has the world's strongest man eaten the world's...
How did we get to Eddie Hall?
How did we not get... He's gravitational force. Has he eaten the world's...
This happens every bloody podcast.
I know. I listen to them all. Has he eaten the world's strongest pepper? Has he eaten
that? I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to bring Eddie Hall
up. There you go.
Yeah, he's bound to have had a go there. That's Eddie Hall. I can't believe we got to him.
But Aaron, just a few things left before we do turn into those two podcasters in the kind of short music video. One thing we like to bring up on this podcast quite regularly is just experiences that kind of musicians have had with people that they admire, and the situations that they've been in, which just can't kind of fathom or expect, and met maybe one of your childhood heroes, maybe, or a band that you loved growing up and have shown Red Fang some love. Is there anything like that that comes to mind, reminiscing on all the mad achievements and experiences the band has been able to have so far?
Well, I mean, it's sort of funny that his name has come up a number of times during this podcast, but the main sort of like, oh gosh, is this happening? Experience was when we got invited to the Orion Music and More Festival. When they invited us, they said, hey, Metallica is having this festival, and they hand selected all the bands for it. And I think like every other band that was sort of as small as we were at the time, we thought, no, there's no fucking way Metallica hand selected us. Somebody, you know, who works in their, you know, in their camp, I'm sure was like, oh, this is like, this band has a funny video, would probably be good to have them on there. And so we said, as we were driving out there, we're like, the only way we're going to believe that Metallica actually has any idea who we are is if James Hetfield comes over and introduces himself to us and tells us. So we got there, like, it was a pretty crazy, horrible experience even getting there. We stayed at a, just like a murder hotel the night before.
To go with the murder van.
Yeah. Nice. It was too bad that we couldn't drive that van there and leave it. So we were like out of our minds with exhaustion and not being able to sleep at that motel. And it was about 5 minutes before we were supposed to go on. And our tour manager came over and he was kind of like freaking out a little bit. And he was like, okay, everybody, 10 minutes before we were supposed to go on. And he said, you guys, 5 minutes before your set time, everybody has to assemble over here because James Hetfield wants to come over and say hi to you before you play. And Brian remembers actually like basically sort of blacking out and punching him a couple times. Brian was in sort of a punchy mood back in those days. And I think punched him in the shoulder a few times, not punching him in the face, but just sort of like, you know, maybe a little too hard, a little too excited, punching him in the shoulder.
Yeah.
I had a little bit of a freak out, and then the first two songs of our set, I was playing and I was like, what sounds so weird? And I realized that the first two songs are in standard E tuning and I was tuned to drop D. And so I'm playing a whole step off and tried to fix it partway through one of the songs and only went up a half step. And so now I'm playing and I was just like, couldn't get it together. And then, of course, found out that Hetfield was actually standing side stage with like our drummer's wife and watching us for the first two or three songs and watching me flail through being a half step off.
I like the idea of your drummer's wife going, it's in tune usually. No, he does know. He knows. He knows.
Exactly.
He's going to sort it out now.
I think she was just trying to pretend she didn't know me.
Who is this band? Who is this band that I'm side of stage for?
Yep.
Oh my god.
Oh, that's awesome. Wow. No, that's great though. Like, even though you had that experience, I mean, it's just great to kind of meet someone like that. And
yeah, have you heard from him since? Have you seen him again since?
Oh yeah, he's written me a bunch of times. He wants to go caving. Yeah.
He's just bought this Robin Hood outfit and he's looking for somewhere to go cave in.
We did run into him again on the this festival we did in Australia called Soundwave.
I think we were on that, yeah.
Oh yeah, it's a good one. I think that it was the last one, the one that we did. It was the one that Metallica headlined it, and maybe they did one more the year after that, but we got there a day early because our set time, there was 55 bands on the festival the year we did it with like 11 stages. And our set time was 11:30 a.m. We literally played before noon. and so, you know, we had to get there a day or two before to kind of whatever jet lag. And Metallica was hosting a barbecue for all of the bands the day before. And so we ran into him again, and I did run over and chat with James Hetfield in a slightly more normal way. But I was pretty jet-lagged, so I think I was kind of yelling at him, but it was nice. We talked about, like, I was just curious about some of the early days of touring for those guys, what it was like, you know, did they ever tour in a van and stuff like that. So, and the answer is no, they toured in a box truck.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention, because I remember I watched the clip earlier of the Dave Grohl Foo Fighters touring documentary that you guys are involved with as well.
Oh, right.
How did that come about? Did like Uncle Dave phone you up, or was it?
He got up his courage and he wrote us a letter and he said, hey, this, you guys, you probably never heard of me. My name's Dave. My name's David. And I play in a band and I'm trying to make a movie. And I thought that maybe you guys would, we're friends with like some of his crew, So his like one of the guitar techs and the bass tech, they live in Portland, and we sort of I mean, I wouldn't say I know Dave Grohl, but we're in contact with that world, and our manager knows Dave, and so I think it was a little bit, the story is a little bit less sexy than it could have been. It's just sort of like, you know,
yeah, he's got this big Red Fang back piece. He's a massive fan, huge fan.
Yeah,
I've just looked now, and 2013 Soundwave Festival that you're talking about. Mm. My band was also.
What is
on
your
as
band?
Well.
What was your band called?
My band was called The Blackout.
Yes,
and yeah, so we did that Soundwave, and I gave away my ticket to that Metallica barbecue to. The Blackout sound guy, because he loved Metallica sound guy. Big something his name was. Big Mick? Big Mick? Did I make it up? Anyway, so he was like, oh yeah, I'd love to meet the Metallica sound guy. So I was like, have my ticket.
And did he?
I'm going. And yeah, he did. He did. Yeah, he went in. He was chuffed. Oh, and yeah, and the drummer from my band cried because he's one of the biggest Metallica fans of all time. And yeah, that was... How good were those sound waves?
Oh my God.
Really good.
So good.
We we were on were we on first? I think we were on first on.
Were you on that stage with?
No, I think we were on the main. It was they had two main stages, I think. So we'd go on, and nobody would give a fuck, right? So they split. It's like a stadium, obviously, and then it's this two stages, main stages. So we were on the one side with nobody in front of us watching us, right? Then there's a barrier up the middle, and then next over there then is 5,000 Anthrax fans.
Yes,
right.
Yep.
And I know you haven't had the misfortune of listening to the Blackout, right? I can't tell you how far apart the Blackout and Anthrax are, right? It got to the point where somehow we were winning Anthrax fans over by me having a long enough mic lead, because I was the front man of the band, wandering over onto Anthrax's stage to try and get all these long-haired fellas to come round and have a look at us. And, that was literally... My main thing on Soundwave was trying to coax older gentlemen to come and like a screamy emo band. And they were having fucking none of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was amazing. Well, and I loved it.
Good on you for getting over there and try. We would have just stared at the floor and, you know... just gone through our set. We were lucky, actually, I think, in some ways, playing so early because no one else was playing at that hour. And so, you know, those Australians, they were already drunk by 10 a.m. They were just excited to get, we had to, like, I remember, I guess it was the Melbourne show. My previous wife, she had come down because we were going to spend some time, like, scuba diving after the tour. And she came down for that show and I think had some friends in Melbourne or something. It was the first show that as we were about to go on, there was no one, like literally zero people in front of it. Like of most course. Of the shows were actually pretty good. And I was excited. And I was like, oh, this is kind of cool that even though we're on at 11:30, there's people showing up because it's Australia and they don't give a shit. And they're like probably still drunk from the night before. And so then that one. It was like, so it's like all, you know, a little bit nervous and excited to like, check it out. We're in Australia and there's people at our shows at 11:30 a.m. and zero people. But then we found out that it was because there was a problem at the gates. And so we started playing to zero people. But then within like maybe 30 seconds, it was like people running from the gates up to our stage. Cause I think it was just, they're just so excited. Like, I don't think anybody knew who we were. It was just like so excited to get the day started. So it turned out to be really good for us to be on so early. I think it was actually a blessing in disguise being on early. Hey, it's the theme. I'm on at 7 a.m., which is like, this is the one time that people are going to listen to this. Oh wait, they don't listen at the time that I'm recording it.
That it's 7 a.m. somewhere, so wherever someone's listening to this, it might be 7 a.m. Right. It might be earlier.
Yep.
We never know.
Have you noticed it's always the shows when you take somebody or you bring in somebody or you need to impress somebody and that go either tits up or no prick turns up too?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we had the same thing. My former band, The Blackout, again, we did Warp Tour and we were on some tiny stage, the Kevin Says stage, which is the smallest one maybe. And we'd been doing like a couple hundred people every day, and we were like, oh, this is cool. And then our new manager flew over from England, and the day he came to see us, we were on the same time as one of the massive bands on Warped Tour who were playing their hometown show. We literally played to our manager, who was leaning against a tree watching us play out in the crowd.
At least he was watching you guys.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, this thing go over and we're like, oh, boys, they're playing the hometown show. I'm going to...
Yeah. I gotta go. The main are on over there.
You didn't see this. He wasn't like...
Yeah. Fuck this shit. Yeah. Or he looks at his phone. And you're like, he's looking at a timetable. And then he goes, oh, I gotta go. The main are on. Boys, what the fuck are you doing playing? The main are on over there, you fucking idiots.
Where is everybody? I gotta go.
I know I'm not managing them, but come on, they are a better band, so I'm going to be over there with everybody else.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, yeah, Aaron, this has been a great chat, very funny. We've enjoyed this so much. Just before you go, obviously, Red Fang's new album, Arrows, can be coming out now. Is there anything else we can look forward to or expect from the band in the coming months, or anything you'd like to plug at all?
That we do have another video that's just about finished in editing process, so that's going to pop up onto your phones pretty soon, I hope. Maybe that will have come out actually before this podcast has aired, but in any case, go check it out now. And then we also just announced a show.
Well, can you tell us? Yeah, can you tell us the premise of it?
No, because I was barely in it. It's one that we lucked out that a lot of it involves. we didn't. I didn't have to commute down from Tacoma to be in the video to film the video. There's only one scene, really. I guess I'm in two scenes where we beat somebody up, and then another one where I'm I'm doing the Brian Posehn part where I'm working at the cash register. And we also just announced a show with All Them Witches at the Ryman in Nashville. So that's for Halloween. So that's pretty exciting. And, you know, we'll have probably a couple other videos. And the album is actually coming out on the 4th. Probably some other shows might get announced pretty soon. So just keep an eye out.
Will do. Yeah, well, thank you so much for taking the time, especially very early in the day. Aaron, it's been an absolute blast.
Yeah, it has been very, very fun. Thank you very much. Congratulations on your success so far. And I can't wait to see what happens next. And I can't wait to see more videos from you guys as well. Yes. And more music. So, yeah, thank you so, so much for giving us the time. This has been hilarious. I've enjoyed it very much.
Thank you guys very much. I had a great time.
You're listening to Sabin Podcast! Yes! Ooh, Mexican. Nice. That's got nothing. Yeah, that's nothing to do with the podcast, but nice. Yes. Thank you so, so much to Aaron from Red Fang. I fucking love that chat. There's more chats like that I kind of want, really. It's just fucking hanging out, people I haven't met, just shooting the shit, having a laugh, talking about our heroes, talking about mad shit we've been able to do, talking about the brilliant videos that they've shot and recorded and had fun making. And yeah, he shaved his back for a video. Like
that's commitment. If anyone's committing to a band or committing to a video, shaving your back is up there.
I shaved my willy for a video once, but it wasn't for a music one.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Oh, Sean. But no, I totally agree. Like, it's nice having conversations like this with people we've never met and how so open he was. I just like the fact the first 20 minutes we were on about comedy and animation studios and just having a good laugh. Before getting
that's kind of what I like. I love it, really. I just love the, it's a conversation rather than, you know, tell us about Arrows. You know, yeah. I'd rather just, I found out he'd done a bit of comedy. It's something I'm interested in. Mm. Let's find out fucking how it went for him, his thoughts. Can I get any advice from him? Apparently the advice is just go up there and fucking absolutely crush it and then never do another gig again, apparently, but... thanks to Aaron and thanks to Good as Gold for sorting us out. So thank you very much to Harris and everyone at the team there.
Yes, we do love those lovely, lovely people. And a reminder that their new album, Arrows, from Red Fang is available now. And they just put out a new music video for the track Why. That is a sad saga of a pizza parlor mascot, which sounds very emotional, but I'm sure it's full of laughs as well.
Yeah, and you've instantly made me angry now because you mentioned pizza. Ooh. And we are recording this at the lunch time. The time of lunch.
I do like a good pizza. But people will be probably asking you this, Sean. You did mention in the conversation that there is one of your comedian friends pressuring you to do a stand-up set at some point.
Very much so.
Any thoughts if that's something you're going to try and do soon? I know I'm putting you on the spot by asking you this, but
yeah, I think I will. I literally have to. It's in me now where I have to get out and just talk some shit on stage and do my bit. Especially after last week, I did a gig last week in Liverpool, and just the buzz of being on stage again was fantastic. Or off stage, as I tend to be most of the time, wandering about the venue, trying my best not to lick faces. My friend Vix, whose podcast I did before, is a podcast called the Comedy Arcade Podcast. I did that with three comedians. That was super interesting. And Vix is trying to get me to do stand-up, along with Rich Wilson as well, from Insane in the Membrane podcast. I did that one, and he's a comedian. And they want me to go to the London to do comedy.
It's full of famous people in the London as well. There's always famous people in the London.
If you do stand-up once in London, you are pretty much on a level with Michael McIntyre, I've heard. So, as we all know, I've still kind of got a bit of a fringe, and I can shake it like Michael McIntyre, and I can be surprised by how far into the year we are. Oh, I can't believe it's August! Oh, I can't believe it's August! Oh, can you believe it's August? I can't believe it's August! Yes, Michael McIntyre, we get it. It's a month of the year. So hopefully it'll be happening soon. I'm sure when I've got a date, we'll be talking about it on here.
Oh, yeah.
If you're listening to this on Friday, 6th of August, tomorrow, Saturday, the 7th of August, my band Raiders plays Manchester at Night People for Deadbolt. So come and see us. And then me, Funeral for a Friend, and John Mahon from Kerrang Radio fame are DJing after. So come along. It'll be a laugh. I promise not to lick your face.
Wow, that sounds like that'll be a very messy, messy night. But it's so nice to see the gigs and festivals and all that are going ahead now. It's nice to be...
Yeah!
In a way, I know,
In a way, in an absolutely terrifying, I'm trying my best not to kill my mother type way. Don't get me wrong, I fucking love gigs. There's nobody, right, who loves doing gigs more than me, right? Fact. Yeah. I am... at home, I am happy. I am not thinking of anything else when I'm on stage, right? Apart from, you know, if I've got to fucking sing or if I'm about to spew. That's the two things, really. What's the next word? Or, oh, is that some puke? Nobody loves being on stage more than me, but there's still a fucking killer virus out there that's murdering people and maiming people.
Mm.
So as much as I'm terrified, I'm as excited to play. Also, Raiders' plan was not to be one of the first bands back. So we moved our dates. We went, let's do as far away from... And this was February this year. We were like, let's go as far away as we can. Let's do August. Ha, ha, ha. It'll be done. Everything will be fine. But, the week.
The first band back.
That's us. Of course it fucking is.
Of course.
Come on, Sean's luck. But yeah, Liverpool went really well. None of us got coronavirus, so that was good. So please come and check us out in Manchester. It's going to be a fucking super fun night, I believe. There's like 7 million other bands playing, and they're all very, very, very good.
Nice. Well, speaking of gigs and festivals as well, I'm going to be at Bloodstock Festival next week. Which does not add up whatsoever.
I've got to say, I'm not laughing at Bloodstock. Bloodstock's fucking awesome, right? If you fucking love metal, Bloodstock is fucking fantastic. I'm laughing at you. I Sadly, I will not be able to make it to Bloodstock as I've got a wedding to go to, and a Mormon wedding. So I've never been to a Mormon wedding. So I've got to go to that because I want to see what happens, because I'd imagine it's going to be different from all the other weddings I've been to. But yes, sadly, I cannot make it to Bloodstock. I'd fucking love to. It's a fantastic lineup. But rather than turn it down, we said, tell you what we'll do. Let's send Morgan for some chats with people like Napalm Death.
Yeah, just, you know, as you would imagine, emo kid Morgan Richards will be speaking.
Morgan, what was the first ever gig you went to?
Oh, my first ever gig was Busted, supported by McFly in Newport Center, 2004.
So very, very similar to Napalm Death. So very, very similar. So yes, yeah, Morgan is going to be at Bloodstock. If you see him about, please, please treat him with respect. Oh. Please treat him kindly. He's going to be scared. He's going to be lonely. He's not going to know anyone there. He's definitely going to have his hair down because it looks more metal with his hair down. Please take him under your wing and comfort him for me if any of my metal friends are there, because I'm worried about him, to be honest.
Oh.
I'm worried he's gonna get bullied by the metalers.
probably. But that was very nice. I was expecting you to say, go and punch him in the face or something like that. So I'll take that. But
no,
yes,
not at all.
I will. Yeah. I will be at Bloodstock. I'll be recording things for Sapling Podcast and some extra bits for our Patreon, social media, and all that. I don't know what's going to happen either, but it's definitely going to be something worth checking out. So keep an eye out for that. If you see me, do come and shout Sapnin, say hey, have a laugh. Yeah, Morgan at Bloodstock, who would have thought?
Yeah, if you do see Morgan at Bloodstock and he is crying, leave him be. Oh, bro. Oh, please speak to Napalm Death. I'd fucking love that. That'd be so good. Finally, together at last. Yeah. Who does everybody want together? Well, it's got to be Morgan and Napalm Death, isn't it? That's fucking brilliant. I hope it happens. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, it's a fucking great lineup. I get it. I can't be there. But again, I've got a Mormon wedding and I've never been to one. I haven't got a clue what's going to happen. I don't know what happens at these Mormon weddings.
We're going to have very different weekends. Not the same.
Very. Me and you couldn't have had more polar opposite weekends, right? And to be honest, people would expect, I'm imagining people would probably expect that to be the other way around.
Yeah, maybe.
Like,
probably.
You were going to a Mormon wedding and I'd be going to the metal festival. No, couldn't be further from the truth. I'm going to the Mormon wedding, which I'd imagine is going to be lights on and finished by 10. And you are going to be dancing with the devil for 3 days.
Literally. Wow. But there we are.
Unbelievable.
There we are. But as I said, there'll be stuff for the podcast, our social media, and our Patreon page. So if you head over to patreon.com/Sapnin, there's exclusive content you can only get via being a supporter of the podcast through there. A wonderful community of people that help each other, give each other gifts all the bloody time. They're absolutely awesome. And you get announcements.
People are making more from the Patreon than we are.
That is true. Right? That's a fact.
Via if it's not presents, it's fucking tickets, it's fucking hanging out, it's fucking food for each other, it's sending each other drinks whenever they go to clubs and bars and stuff. They put their table numbers up and then they get inundated. Everybody involved with the Patreon has made as much, if not more, than us so far. So join the Patreon. Oh, it's worth joining, even if you're in a band. Just join, because you meet loads of other people in bands, and then ultimately, at some point, we're bound to do a Sapnin Fest, I'd imagine, because I know I'd like to do it very, very much, and there's loads of bands in there, and we've got all walks of bands as well. It's not just, like, emo bands, it's, like, metal bands, there's pop punk bands, there's, like, classic rock bands, there's all sorts from all walks of life, from fucking signed bands to fucking brand new bands.
And even people working behind the scenes. We've got a lot of tour managers, people who used to work in A&R, people who've worked for some of the biggest bands in the world are in that group as well, surprisingly.
Some producers.
Yeah.
It's fucking mad. Yeah, it's a mad fucking selection of beautiful, beautiful, loving degenerates that I appreciate more than life itself. Thank you very much to everybody who's involved in our Patreon. We love you very, very much.
And while we're saying thank you, if you head over to the description of this episode, there's loads of names from the Patreon I've put in there to thank. But Sean now needs to give a mahoosive shout out to the elite members of our Sapling Podcast community. Those are the top tiers, and this is what they have to say.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
What do you mean what they have to
I don't know.
More?
This is
Thank
what
you very much. Yep, yeah, yeah, too late now. We've done it. Thank you very much. Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Leibowei, Mikey McDonald's, McMuffin Buns, Janelle Caston, Mitch Perry, Kelly Young, Dilly Grimwood, Kelly Irwin, Liam Connolly, Drew Styles, Paul Hirschfield, Nathan Croshaw, Emma Barber, Sammy G, Shani Meyer, Boxel Anderson, Tony Michael, Amandine Urbano, Kat Besant, Captain Hannibal, Jenny Robson, Murray Grimwood, Mike Oxmall, Johnny Phillips, Amy Campion, Caroline Robson, Caitlin Richards, Kevin Clark, Louis Cook, Martina McManus, Lydia Henderson, Danny Eaton, Carl Pendlebury, James McNaught, Jenny Sexy Boy Munster, Kate Stevenson, Lucy Deeds, Emily Senegals, John and Emma, Kelly Cannon, Livy Cropper, Jason Heredia, Becky Andy, Stuart McNaught, Adam King of the Goss Parslow, Ollie Amesbury, Chris Howard, Alice Wood, Josh told my girlfriend she was drawing her eyebrows too high. She looked surprised, Chris. Thank you very much. Daniel Stevenson, Reese Bowring, Craig Irvin, Amy Chilvers, Ben Evans, Mark Jones, and by last but not least, Connor Lewins and family.
Woo!
Thank you very much to all of those people. Honestly, you keep us going, as well as anybody else who is involved with our Patreon. If you've thought about joining, thank you very much, but fucking do it. And also, yeah, thank you to anybody who's previously been a member of the Patreon as well. That doesn't go unnoticed, and we still appreciate you very, very much.
Yes, and thank you to anyone who's listened this far. Go and give us a follow on our social media pages at Sapling Pod. Send us a message, give us some suggestions, saying what you've enjoyed from this episode, whatever. We just like to hear from you and to have a little chat. But this has been another great episode. I'm excited for a few things we've got coming up in the coming weeks that's going to surprise you, especially with next week's podcast. And it's just going to be a jolly good time.
Yes, yes. Also, Friends of the Podcast Junior are going on tour August the 10th. In the UK, check out musicajunior.com because that band is fucking awesome. And I've just heard some of their new songs that they're demoing at the moment. And they are big rock anthems.
Ooh.
So, yes. Oof.
Fantastic.
Check them out, musicajunior.com. Yes. That's it. Should we go?
Yes. We'll see you next week. Nice one.
Dan said it is done. Sapnin'!
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.